Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Come to Air Temple Island, the new home. I'm the Avatar. You gotta chill with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
Go away, Mako.
Don't worry. I will protect you, my feeble turtle duck.
I will make no such promises.
Bolin's got some moves, huh?
You amuse me. I will make you mine.
You shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I can't wait to get started.
Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DonBuFang.net. If you want extensive discussion on Korra from longtime fandom members, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Sam.
Hey, people.
Delaney.
Yo.
And Brit.
Hi.
Today we'll be discussing Peacekeepers, the latest episode of Korra. We will go through the episode discussion. Before that, we have some news to go over. And then after that, we're going to talk a little about the animation done by Studio Perot, who has done this book so far, and the quality of the animation, which was, I think, noticeable in a bad way in this episode, which we will get into. You can email us at dylan@dongwufang.net and follow us on Tumblr and Twitter at dongwufang, no spaces. This podcast, if it's your first time listening, is for big Korra fans and also casual fans. I think both can listen to it, and podcasts will be up by, I would say, 1 a.m. now with the schedule change.
That's unfortunate.
Eastern on Fridays. Yeah, it is unfortunate. And you can discuss this podcast on the episode on the DonBuFang forums at donbufang.net/forums. So the biggest Korra news was that Korra has changed time slots to 8:30 now.
Yay, right before a Full House.
Yeah.
And if Korra, you didn't know this, that kind of sucks because it already happened.
Korra led right into Full House. Yeah. Well, yeah. Hopefully you know by now that the schedule change happened.
I hate Full House.
Why do you hate Full House?
Why?
Okay, that is not relevant.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, so this time, Nick has been having big ratings problems overall. And I don't know why specifically they moved it to 8:30. Avatar aired at 8 on Fridays. That seems like a natural time. 8:30 is basically the latest possible slot something can air on Nick.
Wait, what's the show that airs before Korra, then?
So, this week, three repeats of Sanjay and Craig aired before Korra.
Do they think that we're just going to sit and watch Sanjay and Craig before we watch Korra? Because nobody did that.
I'm really disturbed by the trailer beforehand.
Yeah.
That promo for the next episode, I mean, it's like, oh, great.
Definitely anyway, not watching that.
Anyway, so the difference here is, will Korra get bigger ratings? Last week, Korra got, I think, 2.3 million viewers, a little bit up from last week, with a 0.5 adults 18 to 49, which was actually down, I believe. So it's sitting at the low 2 millions, which isn't great, but it's one of the higher rated shows on Nick currently because Nick's ratings are down altogether. Now, when Korra was on at 7, a SpongeBob repeat aired before Korra. The things on Nick that get the highest ratings are SpongeBob repeats, like top 10. Now, what's airing before Korra is Sanjay and Craig repeats. And as Nick and Moore said on Twitter, Sanjay and Craig does not repeat well, meaning less people are going to be going into Korra now watching Nickelodeon than had been before, which is very relevant for ratings. So even though maybe Nick likes this time slot better than for Korra, I would say definitely expect lower ratings for this week's episode. Probably below 2 million, but we'll see. This is a big test for Korra. We'll see how much of a built-in audience it actually has. If it's over 2 million, you should call that a win. Or even a round, really. It's not like Nickelodeon doesn't know that Korra's probably getting lower ratings with Sanjay and Craig before it. They have some reason for doing this. I'm not sure what.
Do they even care?
They made a change, so they
throw money at it. I don't see why they wouldn't care.
They definitely care. And they made this change within a week, and I saw people tweeting at Nick before the episode aired. I didn't know the schedule changed, and then Nick Twitter was like, we posted it everywhere. But you did this less than a week before the.
It was like Wednesday. Yeah,
it's not cool. It's pretty ridiculous. You can't be doing that. It's like, oh, we want to take Nickelodeon as a legitimate network. No, well, not when you do stuff like that. No other network does that. Except
like, it hadn't even changed in the TV guide yet. Like, it really, like, it, yeah. I don't think it even changed until, like, today. Like, actually, yeah, in my TV guide.
It changed literally today, yeah. And I guess the Cartoon Network's the only network I've seen do something like this.
That one show.
Young Justice pulling it the day of, which was even worse than this, yeah.
That was terrible.
Yeah.
They did that to multiple shows. They also did it to Generator Rex.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that was it more of a DC thing for that? Or did they pull...
Who knows what they did? It was kind of a combined thing.
Yeah, there may have been extenuating circumstances with that, but I don't know.
But, like, for Generator Rex, they did the same thing. They, like, pulled it, like, the last 10 episodes of the show. Like...
Yeah, so, basically... At least we're not as bad off as Cartoon Network fans.
Like, Cartoon Network's the only reason Nick doesn't look that terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is bad, because I actually like some of their shows.
Yeah, well, Adventure Time specifically, yeah. Okay, so other Korra news. New York Comic Con is coming up, I believe, on the 12th or 13th.
Guess who's not going?
Everyone?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, they only announced the thing is that they announced the panel after the tickets are already sold out.
Wow, so. That's really terrible. That's a terrible thing.
Yes,
yeah, so, it's like really, this is helpful.
Yeah, so it's like Thank even you. If we wanted to go, we can't. So they will be screening Beginnings at.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I don't even care. It's like Beginnings will be airing the following Friday, so.
Yeah, like it doesn't really matter that much.
You got to see it a week before.
It's just annoying. Like, why are they doing that?
Why don't you actually
talk about it instead?
They announced it before, like, any, like, pretty much straight up Korra fans would know that they would be there. Like.
Not
straight up fans, but, you know, people who would be interested in that panel specifically.
You mean, like, more, like, casual fans? Like, wouldn't see it on Brian's Tumblr?
I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
And I guess that's what I mean, Dylan. I don't know.
I don't even know. But either way, it was sold out when they announced it. I don't know why they did
that. Maybe they only announced it because, or, like, decided to do it because it was sold out, you know? Like, they weren't going to do it for a small crowd.
Maybe, that's possible. But either way, Brian, and not Mike, but just Brian and Joaquin will be at New York Comic Con. So
Mike's got better things to do.
I don't know what Mike has to do, but yeah. New scheduling. So Nick's been screwing with the scheduling as well. Both parts of Beginnings will air on either the 18th or the 19th, I can't remember.
Whatever that Friday is,
yeah. It will be airing from 8 to 9. So Korra's new time slot is 8:30, but when they do an hour premiere, when they do an hour long thing, it'll be from 8 to 9. I actually really like them doing Beginnings both in one week. I was previously like kind of not looking forward to having to talk about two parts of Beginnings like in consecutive weeks, because I could see it being the first part being like not exciting, like just leading up to the second part. But now,
oh, you mean like Civil Wars?
Well, like Civil Wars, even that was like more of its own kind of thing. This, I think, would definitely be like a one episode.
Civil Wars didn't even have to be two. Like they could have just named them completely different things.
I mean, I think that Peacekeepers and the Sting are kind of a two part episode. Like we'll see that they probably connect a lot.
Sting.
Yeah. But the next next week is the Sting. So an hour long in the beginning, I'm actually really excited for that. Studio Mir will be back animating that.
And thank God.
That'll be definitely something to look forward to. And then, but the week after that, there's currently no new Korra episode scheduled. I was talking to Nick Stars TV on Twitter about this, and they said that they talked to someone in Nick's scheduling that they were not having a new Korra episode then because they're showing their Halloween stuff that weekend.
Nickelodeon has Halloween stuff.
Yeah, well, Halloween episodes.
Like season 3 of Avatar had a Halloween episode. Actually, like Nickelodeon specifically does Halloween episodes. But I guess
like Rugrats.
But you know they didn't anticipate Korra airing in the fall, so
iCarly.
They
wouldn't have made it.
Yeah, and the other big scheduling thing is that
Cat Dog.
Both Nick and Moore and Nick Stars TV think that if you plan out the Korra schedule, if you like read it out, which I've been doing on Tumblr, the finale will either air the week of Thanksgiving or
they're not gonna do that
after. Well, I was talking to them and
I didn't like the Nick Star's Day of Black Sun air like around Thanksgiving.
I think so. That was a while ago. More recently, last year, the iCarly series finale aired the day after Thanksgiving.
Oh yeah, it did, so didn't
Nick,
it?
Nick has shown a willingness to.
Yeah, because I was
day after is a tad different than like.
Well, normal.
Oh wait, Thanksgiving's on a Thursday. Never mind.
Yeah, so
ignore me.
I guess broadcast TV never has this problem because there's not too much new program.
Well, then again, I think they knew since that was the iCarly finale, it would get like a lot of ratings.
Yeah,
so it didn't matter.
Anyway, both Nick Twitter accounts, like not official, but like the ones who follow the stuff, think that they would air it on that week. So we might be looking at a Thanksgiving finale, which I guess from a podcasting perspective is troublesome. I mean,
we'll be home, and
I will be. I think I'll be out of town, so we'll see about that.
I don't know what I'm doing,
but I won't be home.
Yeah,
because my grandmother takes everything away from my family.
It might be hard to watch like wherever people are. I don't know. It's whatever. It doesn't really matter. Just let's get the not. I'm fine with not having a week wait.
I might be like dead from eating too much food.
Yeah, you'll passed out for 24 hours, so you'll miss the finale. the last bit of news is there's new episode titles. Episode 9 of Book 2 will be called The Sting. Episode 10, I don't know why I didn't put this somewhere. Episode 10 will be called, is this one Night of a Thousand Stars?
Is episode 9 actually The Sting, or did you this thing, or did you just make that up?
The guide. Did I say The Sting? Episode 9 is The Guide. Episode 7 is The Sting. Episode 9 is The Guide. Episode 10 is A New Spiritual Age. Episode 11 is Night of a Thousand Stars.
That's a beautiful name.
And episode 12
really pretty.
Is Harmonic Convergence.
Those are such bad really titles, weird. Though.
Harmonic Convergence. Terrible.
These are like the highest concept titles they've done in a while, and they're like back-to-back. I don't know, this gets me really excited.
Like Harmonic Convergence. Never mind, that's
too many big words.
We'll get that one with that one.
And Night of a Thousand Stars better be beautiful, for the record.
It sounds
the name
nice,
like that.
I don't know if it's like a good title, though.
It makes me very, very interested in the second half of the season. They
sound like painting titles.
They seem different. Yes. They definitely evoke the spirituality that we'll get from the second half. And I'm definitely looking forward to that, especially after the rut we've been in Korra for a while. So yeah, that's the stuff. You can find all Korra news on our Tumblr, donwufeng.tumblr.com. And on our website. Well, I mean, it's this website's Tumblr. I run the Tumblr, but yeah. Anyway, that's Korra news. Let's get into Peacekeepers. Peacekeepers was written by Tim Hedrick and directed by Colin Heck and animated, unfortunately, by Studio Perot. Give me your initial thoughts on Peacekeepers. What did you think of the episode overall? What maybe specific things did you like or dislike about it? Let's start with Delaney.
Well, I don't know if it's because we're getting used to the crazy pacing, but I was like, this is an alright episode. I'd even say it was better than last week's. I'm trying not to get into that stage where I'm like, oh my god, Korra. But I really like this episode, though the biggest downfall I do think is the Milo plotline. I love Milo. I don't want to get hate because they're like, you hate Milo. I love Milo. He's adorable. I thought it was really cute, but it served no, like, I couldn't see a point to it unless it's supposed to be like, oh, Korra, she has to, you know, have some assertiveness, but like, other than like, what did that have to do with anything? So I guess that's my biggest thing with it, and the lack of Asami being amazing.
Yeah.
So that's, and the strange dialogue, which I guess I'll get into later.
Yeah, we'll get into some specifics. Okay. Britt, what did you think of it?
I think this was my favorite episode so far. Like, and when I say that, I mean, yeah, of the season. This is definitely my favorite episode. I was going to say maybe of this. Nah, it wasn't of the series. But of this episode, I think I'm starting to get used to the fact that the pacing is just kind of everywhere. And I'm starting to maybe think that it's just, you know, an artifact of their storytelling aspect that worked really well in Avatar because Avatar had more. I'm going to use the word simplistic, but I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. I mean that it was just more childlike, and they're trying to execute it using more complex plots, and so it doesn't Forge as well. And I felt with this episode, and as I feel with the episode so far this season, is that they gain more and more coherence, you know? Like, I feel like the pacing is either getting better, it's working more somehow. So I'm liking the writing better. I feel like some of the comedic aspects are getting better. Like, Bolin's joking was taken off. Like, it's meant to be awkward now. And we get the awkward reaction. So I actually liked that. I thought he was good, and we're sort of seeing his discord with the group. And I actually feel like he's getting some emotional, like, development. We're showing how he's easily manipulated and pushed around. And then I thought the animation was better in this episode, even though it's still, like, the same weird stuff.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And what else was I going to
say? No, yeah, that's good. We'll get into, stuff later. We'll definitely talk about the animation at the end of the episode discussion. Okay. Sam, what did you think?
Well, I liked the episode. I mean, I didn't think it was the best episode, but you know, things don't have to be the best thing ever in order for you to like them. Yeah, I didn't really like all the Milo stuff. It kind of felt like it went nowhere. It just, like, it really only served to show that, oh, Tenzin, you shouldn't have been so hard on Korra or whatever, or something like that. I liked all the Bolin stuff. You know, he's my fave. I didn't like how, like, the whole Asami plot is kind of just there, and it doesn't have anything to do with anything, and it's not, like, it doesn't, like, have sort of, like, a weight to it. And I don't like that because Asami's cool. I like that Lin was there. You know, the animation, we'll talk about that later. And, yeah, I liked the episode. It was nice.
Wow, look at everyone being positive.
Well, I do think it was better than last week.
Obviously, I have to be the negative one here. But no, but actually, I thought I was not a fan of this episode, really, in any respect. I know people have been getting on us for being negative, but I thought that this episode, more than any so far, took incredible logical leaps in storytelling. And they expected, not only, but previous episodes expected you to catch up. This episode just left chunks out. And it doesn't really make sense, and it doesn't work. I thought this was the worst episode of Korra or Avatar so far.
I say that about last week.
I thought last week was the second worst now. I don't think it's close, really. It's not that this wasn't enjoyable. I didn't really care about the plot aspects they did focus on. And yeah. What they did focus on wasn't executed well. I guess you guys would call it. I'm going to try to avoid the term pacing because we've been using it a lot. But yep. I think really there's just these leaps in storytelling that don't really make any sense. And we'll definitely get to specifics. It happens pretty much in every scene we see. In every scene we see, they skip ahead. And not only do they skip ahead, each scene is executed incredibly fast. An example is the Korra going to Iroh talking scene. That is one of the worst written scenes I've ever seen from...
Yes. Yeah,
Tim Hedrick wrote this scene? Are you kidding me, Tim Hedrick? There's nothing.
It was just very awkward dialogue.
The bare bones of their conversation is the only thing that's there, and it's not even that. It's not a natural discussion, and it doesn't...
My hands are tied.
It's so fast. They go over so much ground so fast. I don't understand why they need to go on this incredibly fast storytelling pace that they're going on. It's completely to the detriment of the show, and we've seen it episode after episode after episode, and I really want them to slow down, and that's why I'm so much looking forward to Beginnings, is because that's going to force them to slow down and take some time to talk about something that's not this. It's been really disappointing. I thought I was going into this episode with zero expectation after last week, and then it somehow was not up to that.
I definitely felt like, which I actually made a note of this, like, in my phone. For some reason, I forgot. But the whole, like, I really did feel like at several points, I even think the Iroh point, where I was like, did I miss an episode of Korra? Like,
yeah.
What's going on?
I think it's gotten to the point where I care about everything other than what's happening with Korra. I care about Bolin. I care about Asami. I don't really care about anything else.
I think I used to be like that, but now this week I stopped. I don't know if I cared about any of the plot lines this week, which is unfortunate. I like that you guys are positive because people don't like when I'm negative. But yeah, I can't not be negative though because this was just really.
There's nothing
really
wrong
bad.
With being negative.
Yeah, I mean,
like, you have,
why...
like, good reasons to be negative, Dylan.
I will give a lot of reasons.
I think the reason why, like, we're negative is because we wanted to do better. Like, we're disappointed, and we wanted to, like, be better. So like, we're only negative because we love.
Yes, our reaction
is kind of disgusting. Oh, sorry.
It's our reaction isn't going to do anything, but, like, yeah.
Yeah. It's what we do.
Okay, let's get into specifics now. So I thought the A plot of this episode, well, not I thought, it was Korra versus Raiko. Korra trying to get troops there, Raiko being like, no, and yada yada yada. Varric was part of both the A plot and a different plot, which is either the B or the C, depending on how you look at it. The B plot was lemur training, I guess.
The most pointless plot ever.
Which we'll talk about. And then the C plot, I would say, is Bolin and Varric. I think this was structured similar to last episode. Maybe I'm just starting to think about it in these terms now, but I think it's different that this episode and last episode, the A and the C plots have been intertwined, and the B plot has been completely separate.
Air temple.
Yeah.
Yep. Air temple shenanigans.
I would once again question why the C plot exists. I'm not saying that I don't want to see more of Bolin, but it was...
I think they,
better
like...
Better than the B plot.
Yeah, I think what they want to do is they want to show more Bolin, but they kind of need to shoehorn him in there.
Yeah.
So, hey, Bolin's here too. He's not in the background.
I thought maybe the Bolin stuff was some of the more slow-paced stuff of the episode, which was good.
I think, yeah, it's
I thought
good.
The Bolin
it's
stuff
better.
Maybe worked, even though I didn't like how they wrote it, like specifically the Bolin interview scene, which we'll get to, I didn't think that was good, but I thought it was at least I understood what they were doing, and it was like to take a breather. If we take away lemur training, maybe we can actually spend more than 5 seconds on Korra and Iroh having this dumb dialogue. Again, they're just trying to put too much in there. There's too many characters right now.
They're rushing.
Yeah, I agree.
We wanted air babies. We wanted good air babies, and they could have easily made this all one plot.
Army of lemurs.
Somehow, Game of Thrones, which has more characters and more plot, is less rushed than Korra. And
then again, isn't that like...
Well, compared to the books, Dylan,
an hour?
It's pretty rushed. Game of Thrones, would know if you had read them.
Well, no, the show, yeah, it's
yeah, but
very
like,
fast-paced.
Game of Thrones is still pretty rushed if you want to compare it, but...
I mean, a book is so long, but...
They have, like, more time in the show.
It's a different medium. They do have more time in the show. I think that's one of the big problems. Nick is trying to be... Or Mike and Brian are trying to make Korra Game of Thrones, and it's not... One of the reasons is because it's half the time.
This was my biggest issues with last season because it was a miniseries, but you can't really do a miniseries with half-hour episodes.
We thought last season was crazy rushed. This is ridiculously more so than that. I missed last season a lot, honestly.
Because we know that these, like, storylines and these ideas are brilliant, right? This is a good idea.
I don't really think so. I don't think
I don't know anymore.
Yeah, I don't know anymore.
For a second.
Yeah.
The thought of the Southern Water Tribe and showing sort of the complexity of war and sort of the political aspects and the manipulation, which is what they're trying to do. Like, I can see that and how we create sort of a culture and a secular basis for war to occur. And for stereotypes and prejudices to occur, which are occurring within Korra, they're against her northern tribe, how a civil war occurs, which are very complex political ideas, but they're trying to squeeze this into a half-hour episode, and then they're trying to do it on Nick, which is a child's, children's network, and that's why Milo is there. Like, I hate to break it to you, but they got to appeal to little kids at least a little bit.
Well...
And that's what's happening. It's just not working.
Okay, so I think you're thinking like Mike and Brian. Mike and Brian are like, let's execute these complicated things. Let's execute these really adult storylines in the show. You can see it several times in this episode. They have the propaganda plot line. They throw in this appealing to the audience in a sports match. It's like, let's throw these like things in here. But they're not doing them complexly. Like you said, Mike and Brian are... it's like these brilliant storylines. I don't think intent counts. I think this whole Civil War plotline, there's nothing deep about it. They're just like putting it on the surface that it is quote unquote deep. It's just the stereotypical war plotline that we've seen over and over, and they're really not adding anything special to it. It seems interesting because it's in the Avatar universe, but really we've seen stuff like this done more subtly done in Avatar. Not that I want to compare Korra to Avatar, but they had complex things in Avatar, but they didn't need to only focus on them and try to bring out the adultness in it. I don't know. I just think that I don't think we should say that Mike and Brian are brilliantly writing the season. I think it's really a step
I didn't say
down.
They were brilliantly writing well, like, the idea. Yeah, the idea. Brilliant. Okay, sure. Like, it's a good idea.
I guess my point is that it doesn't count for anything.
They're dealing with cliches. That's the problem. Like, yeah, I mean, like, I do agree. Like, I'm seeing everything you're seeing, Britt. Like, I was part of like things I'd written down that like these are all these brilliant ideas they're bringing in, but like their execution's everything, and it's not there.
No, it's not.
And they're doing it in a cliche way.
Bothers me. That's what I'm saying. Why we're angry because we know it could be this.
Yeah,
good.
I'm fine with Mike and Brian trying to do that stuff, but it's just this isn't what it is.
It's just not there.
The final product
really
doesn't match it. Okay, and we'll get some more into this, but let's get into specifics now of the episode. We start off, we instantly in Republic City. What was your reaction to seeing Republic City right away? Were you like, yay, good to
be back?
It looks different.
I was shell-shocked by Lynn, for the record.
Okay, Lynn was there, yes. Certainly happy to see Lynn back.
Lynn!
There might have been tears of joy, maybe.
I think
I'm
probably,
so glad you're
even
back.
Even though the Facebook page spoiled it earlier in the week.
I'm glad I'm not on Facebook, huh?
Well, we posted on Tumblr, but yeah. Anyway, thanks for starting a war, Lynn says.
I love Lynn.
Yeah, I guess that's an okay Lynn line. That's fine.
Well, I didn't say I have a problem with it, but I was a bit like, that was weird.
Abrupt, you think?
Well, I mean, Lynn is abrupt, but like, yeah. I don't know, like, it just didn't fit. Like, I'm not saying it didn't fit Lynn's game. I don't know, it was just strange.
It didn't fit the situation.
Yeah, like, I expected Lynn to be like, I don't know, like, just go crazy. Not crazy, but, like, I mean, more sarcasm and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, extra snarky. But
so, like, thanks for starting a war, Twinkletoes.
This is what we see. No. This is what we see in every scene this episode. The first line is what we need to hit on right now. And even if it doesn't make sense, like, not that it doesn't make sense, even if it's awkward, it's just Lynn needs to start talking about this. Then we need to talk about the Southern World Tribe peaceful protest. And, It needs to go really fast because there's about 1,000 scenes in this. What should I be doing? Oh, Bolin. Okay, so this was my point here. But at the end, Bolin, the scene post says, "What should I be doing?" And it's like
Maka's just like, "Ugh."
It's no. The point is that this is Bolin's character. What should he be doing? Indeed.
Yeah.
There is nothing he should be doing. But it's funny because this episode they actually give him a plot line.
And Farrah comes over like, "Hey, let's do stuff."
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not quite as sad as having to give Sokka a whole episode. They give him a C-plot.
Yeah, that's true. Sokka not doing enough in season 3, so we give him Sokka's master. Bolin gets the C-plot in.
It's the C-plot.
Yeah. Tonrak, still.
Not Tonrak.
Yeah, that's wrong.
He's not Tonrak.
Yeah, Tonrak. Unalaq still needs Korra for the Northern Spirit Boulder. Last podcast, we were wondering whether he's being sincere or not. Apparently, he was trying to. They make a big point. That's what Korra. Okay, so first of all, how do the twins know that that's what Unalaq told Korra in the basement? They weren't there. That's a plot fault. But secondly, why do they spell this out very clearly? Unalaq's like, that's what I told Korra, what she needs to know. Like, they make a big point of that. That's maybe not natural dialogue between father and his two children and his children. And also,
well, they're his spiritual minions.
Well, it's, yeah. See, this is my theory, but I don't know.
According to your theory.
Yeah.
Which I'm starting to believe now.
I don't think anyone can make the argument that they're human, for the record. They're robots.
Well, I think the biggest problem is that they don't seem like related to Unalaq. Like,
yeah.
It's not like a family dynamic.
They definitely seem minion-like. That's definitely an apt label for
them. Where is their mother is my big question.
That's a good question.
Did she die or like get captured by a spirit?
Wait, he's
trying to get her back, and these children have just been sort of raised with like this cold, lifeless like father figure that's just like away from them.
Possibly, really creepy.
Maybe.
More
I know he's going to have some sort of emotional attachment. Otherwise, they're just going to make him into a Disney villain and
He could be.
I don't know if Mike and Brian would take the Disney villain route.
We give Mike and Brian a lot of credit sometimes for villains. Zhao is a Disney villain. Like, the reason we love Zhao is because he's so over the top. Like, it's not like Zhao is an amazing villain. He was just very one-sided.
But he didn't.
He was also hilarious.
Need to be, you know. He was funny. We didn't take on any really serious things, like, you know.
I think
that's why he's a Disney villain.
We were
that's
sympathetic to
it.
Zhao, not because Zhao was sympathetic, but because he was
pathetic.
I don't know why. I don't know why. It's just
he was just sad.
We get Crazy Eska. I'm glad they don't focus on them much because I'm done with Crazy Eska.
Like, her outfit scared me.
She's becoming a Disney like villain. What is this outfit change? Like,
I'm just done
crazy?
with the crazy girlfriend trope that we talked about last week. By the way, someone in the reviews says we say tropes as negative things. Tropes aren't always negative things, but this trope is a negative thing because it's a sexist trope. Most tropes are fine. It's just and tropes can be overused or just normally used. Anyway,
that's kind of what makes.
By the way,
here's
a positive about this episode: no blatant sexism. Hooray! So we won't be talking much about that this time. Pokey, you know, and Milo being adorable is what I wrote in the outline for this scene.
It was pretty adorable. That if the B plot had anything going for it, it was cute.
Pokey's adorable, and I found Milo adorable last book, but this season he's like super adorable.
Yes.
And there were no bathroom jokes.
Yeah, so we're talking about...
That was so nice. I was so happy.
I wanted to make this point. Even though this episode... I thought this is a very flawed episode, there's no blatantly horrible things. Like, there's no bathroom jokes, and there's no blatant sexism. Like, yay. That's a positive.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
This is like... We just got off this topic, but there was one thing about Eska. Why is she like, Cora is the reason for all my problems now?
Maybe they're trying to make, like, some sort of weird one-sided love... love triangle, I guess.
Because she was like, I'm gonna kill her. Like, that's what you got out of that. And you're like, what?
Yeah, it seems
maybe
like...
Maybe they're trying to give, like, Eska, like, some sort of emotional reason behind wanting
like,
to destroy
her. Like, what? Like, what is this? I was really confused by that part. I was like, what is... Like, I know Cora said that they're creepy, and they've always creeped her out, but, like, what did Cora do to make...
What they're trying to turn it into is a, Eska thinks Cora stole Bolin from her. But we don't really see that, and, also, it's annoying because Eska is, again, being the jealous crazy girlfriend. Ex-girlfriend, yeah.
And she's jealous of her cousin. Like, so it's crazy family girl drama, which is worse.
No, Bora.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Still in my heart.
Bora, obviously still exists. Any more thoughts about Milo and the training of the lemurs in Tenzin?
Mm-hmm.
There's three scenes of this. This first scene is pretty innocuous and fine. I think there's a bad line later on, but we'll get to that. Then we see that scene from the trailer, which everyone is like, oh, it's Katara's funeral. No. It's a protest of the Southern Water Tribe Cultural Center.
Well, I'm glad it's not her funeral.
Yeah, that's good. And then a guy blows up the thing.
That was a blatant terrorist attack.
We're not going to talk about Sokka's statue.
Yeah, so this is another thing. It's like Mike and Brian.
I didn't know that was Sokka's statue! Dude, what? I didn't either. And then I watched it the second time, and I was like, it is a Sokka statue.
I need to see it again.
Wait, I didn't know.
At first I saw it on Tumblr, and I was like, no, it's not. And then I rewound it, and it was a freaking Sokka statue.
I have to go on the Sokka tag. Hold on.
Yeah.
Like, he has this boomerang. Boomerang is in the statue.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I didn't even know this. You should have said this before. Now we're like...
Well, I thought you guys knew. Like, I thought I was just like...
Okay, I see it. Yeah. I thought that was the Zuko statue.
Me too!
Yeah, and then
I watched it the second time, and it's...
So this is a
statue.
It's in front of the Southern Water Tribe cultural thing.
Oh my God, that makes you so happy!
So everyone has a statue but Suki. Everyone but Suki has a statue.
Does Katara have a statue?
Katara's alive, so...
Yeah, she doesn't need a statue yet. I mean...
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's... They should build, like, a palace in her honor somewhere, to be honest.
So it's the Sokka statue. Okay.
The Taj Mahkatara.
I was debating, between two grades this episode. It just got boosted up by 0.5.
Exactly. I thought I said something. I really thought I was the only person who didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know about that. That's
Thank you so much, Shalini.
Yes.
I was like, oh my God, boomerang.
They showed up for, like, 5 seconds. Anyway, you can tell that we podcast, like, right after the episode. Maybe
literally.
Yeah. I don't know, they blew up Mako's, like, stop firebender guy, and then there's the device that's detonated. Oh, the thing I wanted to point out is that they're fire trucks. I don't know if we know that before.
Okay, question. Here's my question about the fire trucks and the firemen, because they clearly have to have a brigade. Brigade. I didn't say that right. Anyway. Brigade. I don't know. Okay, I don't care anymore. Are they waterbenders, or are they firebenders, or are they together putting the fire out? That was my big question.
Yeah, can firebenders put out fire?
I don't know.
Mako kind of did. I don't. Can they? Like,
We didn't see the actual firebenders. We didn't see the actual.
Oh wait, didn't Roku like
firefighters? Water. Yeah.
We just saw the fire trucks.
Yeah, like, are they waterbenders? Are they firebenders? Are they both? I mean, I'm just so confused.
I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know.
Any other things from that scene?
There's a Sokka statue.
Yes, okay. Bolin.
So now they build remote control bombs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That was such a blatant terrorist attack, and that's just really.
Yeah, so that's like, yes. Oh, let's have terrorism in the show.
Like
and the fact that it's remote controlled.
I'm glad they didn't say the word terrorism.
Just happened.
I'm glad they didn't say the word terrorism in the show, because that wouldn't have made sense. That's a very time period word, and that's not that time period.
It happened.
Yeah, I guess. And I mean, I don't know if it's a big deal. Like,
well, I thought that, there were a lot of terroristic themes in the first season of Korra, which we talked about. Also.
Yeah, Amon was like kind of a terrorist. Yeah, true. Yeah, whatever.
I felt like it was a big deal for me.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's a big deal, like, that they're putting that theme into the show. Like, we haven't seen that blatantly used before. But I'm glad, I guess my reaction is I'm glad the show didn't make it a big deal. Like, it's just a plot device. And like,
I understand that.
Well, I like that it's
subtle.
Oh, sorry.
What, Britt?
I said it was allowed to be subtle. Like, it wasn't just like, look, OMG! It just happened.
Yeah, I agree, Delaney.
Well, I think it's going to become a major plot thing, which is what I'm excited about, and the fact that I actually like Mako this season, because I think he's going to be big detective, and there's going to be, like, a plot for Mako where he tries to solve everything.
Big detective.
Yeah,
which leads to my theory that I hope I get to say later.
Coral will just become a 20s noir.
It's going to be, like, Clue.
Yes.
If it could be like Clue and then combined with a Disney movie and they all started singing and dancing, I think I would enjoy this show immensely.
Colonel Mustard in the dining room with a knife.
Bolin fans. Bolin interview with the pro-bending announcer.
The woman with the popcorn, that was the best.
I cry myself to sleep sometimes.
It's like this is the one scene they actually slow down on, and I understood what they were doing right away. So it's a little bit frustrating. I'm not gonna like not appreciate that they didn't slow down, because I'm glad they did, but it was pretty obvious that they're doing Bolin manipulates the crowd with like one word. And
what did Varric like mean by I think I found your calling? Did he mean like acting?
Charismatic.
Yeah, he meant he's like he's good with people and he can be an actor, yeah.
Yeah, like people love him.
Yeah.
Oh, obviously they do.
Everyone loves Bolin, yeah.
I know.
I think Bolin is surprisingly charismatic. And he also understands like innately how to get people like excited for things, and he could use that to his advantage if he like decided to become crafty and whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll be honest, I didn't like Bolin until this episode.
Oh. That's so weird, because I didn't like Mako at all until this episode. This is the first episode I didn't want to punch him in the face.
Well, I didn't like Mako before, but now I'm just like, he's okay. Like, now I like him, but it's not like I hated him before.
I don't like
this season,
him.
I mean.
But now I'm not, like, enraged by everything that comes out of his mouth.
Yeah, no,
that was my first season.
Mako's still bad.
Well, he's not good.
We'll wait until we get to that one, you know?
Yeah, let's discuss
improvement,
that
Dylan, improvement.
I mean, maybe, I guess. Improvement from... I mean,
Mako isn't even here.
If you're going from the worst character ever, there's only improvement to be made.
True. I don't know.
Don't worry. Okay, Varric in the next scene. Don't worry. I was a big contributor to his campaign, to his election campaign. Him and the other guy got to hedge your bets. Like that. I think that was my favorite line from the episode.
Yes, that was.
I really like Varric's personality.
Yeah, like that fits Varric's personality. It fits Mike and Brian trying to put campaign financing into the show, but it was done in a very succinct way. Let's not jump. Let's not spend time on this theme. We can just have it as a funny line. It's like, oh, this, and it makes sense. They're doing it in a way that makes sense for Varric's character. That also,
I like that Varric is funny. That's
Varric is funny. Yes, but I also like that he's becoming funny in a sinister way. Like he's not like this great guy. Like, which is interesting. And we see President Ryko voiced by Spencer or something.
That guy.
I linked to him earlier. I don't remember. I'll find his name. But yeah, what did you think of President Ryko?
He looks like Teddy Roosevelt.
Is that what yes, they're going for?
Yes, I totally get that.
I don't know if that's what they're going for. You seem pretty.
Even though Hiroshi Sato looked like President Roosevelt.
Yeah, that's it. He did look like Hiroshi Sato. His name is Spencer Garrett, who voiced Draco.
Everybody just looks like Hiroshi Sato all the time.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Apparently, if you're like a middle-aged, slightly overweight man, you just end up looking like Theodore Roosevelt in Avatar.
I mean, in the 20s, yeah.
And then you have like a mustache.
So here's the plot.
I actually.
Yes, never mind.
Keep going, Delaney. Never mind.
Here's the plot thing we need to ask about, because we asked this question last episode too. Why can the president send the United Forces? Did we know last season? It didn't seem like the president of Republic City, or well, there wasn't one, but it didn't seem like Republic City can control the United Forces.
He's the commander in chief.
That's what I'm assuming. They totally revamped their government.
You said maybe they have a constitution
he,
now.
No, he even said it like when he was talking to General Iroh.
What did he
say? Like, I'm your commander or something
like
that.
Yeah, well, yeah. So this is another example of Mike and Brian changing the rules and not telling us that they did that, which is frustrating. It was much more frustrating a few episodes ago when they did that with Varric also controlling the Southern Water Tribe, because that contradicted what we previously knew about the show. This one, at least, it's like something Korra based, and it's like they're changing it, but it already changed anyway because they're going to a president system, so maybe this can change too. I guess it's fine. It's just another thing.
Here's another logical thing that doesn't make any sense.
Still not.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Lenny?
This is slightly later, but I feel like it's okay to bring up now. Mm-hmm. So when he like goes storming into Lin's office, like Washington D.C. has a mayor. If for those who don't know, so what is he doing? Like, is he in charge of the city and the country? Like, what's going on? Because I'm still under the belief that Republic City isn't just it. I think it's the capital. So I'm just confused as to why he thinks doesn't he have cronies? Doesn't he have like people to do things for him? Why does he feel the need? Like,
what is Republic City the capital of then?
The United Republic. Yeah.
But what does that even mean?
No, we've never seen anything outside of the confusion.
But at the same time, though, they still have a mayor.
You'd think Ryko would have people doing this stuff for him. Yeah.
I mean, cities have mayors, we've had mayors in Korra. I feel like we did. We've had like local leaders before. I think it's possible.
Yeah.
See, this is possible.
Mayor. Yeah.
So why isn't there? It just doesn't make any sense.
I don't know.
Just I choose not to think about it.
That bothered me. Makora fight. I don't even remember what happened.
It happened.
They were upset.
They just screamed at each other in the apartment.
They seemed upset.
That's a nice apartment, though. I like it. I like the fire hurts, Mister.
Apparently, you make bank when you're.
They had a beautiful couch. I quite like. I was admiring it too, weren't you, fam? They had like a nice couch and like, a coffee table.
I know. I really like the
picture. The walls were a nice color. I was like, they picked that up.
I wonder if like both Mako and Boland live there.
You can tell we're such big Makora shippers.
So that's our thoughts
on the Makora fight. We like their house.
So they also have a firefighter poster.
That's true. I did see the firefighter poster.
Like, how cocky are you that you're like?
I want that poster. Can I have it?
It is a poster, but like, why did
Redbubble make that poster?
I'm sure Redbubble is listening.
See, like it's in their lip. People can see the poster.
Okay, I don't even know. Let's okay, here's a big problem. Asami, she
totally didn't care about the Makora file. Like,
she comes up to Korra and she's like,
my
company's about to go bankrupt or something. And it's like, oh great, I'm glad we knew that, Asami, and that's the last we'll ever hear of that, and you don't matter in the plot, and your company doesn't matter.
It really sucks. Yeah. Like, it holds no weight at all. It's just like, hey, I'm over here doing bad stuff off camera.
Yeah, so this is one of the examples of logical leaps. Like, we don't see any of this stuff happen, and it just happens very fast.
It bothers me especially because, like, in the first episode of the season, like, she's presented with, like, you know, Boland, Mako, and Korra. And, like, that beginning scene, I was like, oh, she's going to be, like, really important. She's going to be, like, one of the main four things happening this season. But
they don't focus her. They focus on everyone else in the episode, but not her.
Not really. They don't focus on her.
Like, everyone gets their little moment, but not Asami, unless she's with Korra.
Yeah, so I think just Mike and Brian didn't understand maybe that she was their best character last season. And if they had time to gauge fan reaction, they would have did something different. But they probably wrote book two years ago, so... They wouldn't really know. Maybe probably longer than that, 3 years ago. Varric Idea Storm, and he's the propaganda film that he wants to use Boland in. The Adventures of Nuk-Tuk, Hero of the South.
You know what? You know, when I first heard that, I thought that was like a reference to Nanook of the North, which is like one of the most famous documentaries that has ever happened ever.
What's it about?
In the 1920s. It's like a stage documentary of an Inuit named Nanook who lived in the North in like Canada. So yeah.
Cool. Yeah, maybe. Okay. So I don't know. I think it's probably more them trying to do propaganda films.
Well, yeah.
It reminded me of like the propaganda films from like World War I, if you ever had to watch those in history class.
Well, I like how they're... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Delaney.
Well, I thought, like, what I think is interesting is that they're not doing, like, the straight-out propaganda you'd expect. Because we actually saw, like, straight-out propaganda in book one, and I think this probably just ties into Varric's character, but, like, you know, propaganda films, like, they didn't mess around. They were like, this is what this is about, and this is the title of the propaganda. But now they're, like, making it a movie.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Because usually propaganda films, like, this is obviously a propaganda film. Like, there are tanks thrown everywhere, like... But now they're like, this is a movie.
Well,
did you know that Casablanca was a propaganda movie? It was.
I've never seen it, so I'm not really surprised.
It's one of the most famous movies ever.
Okay. I just haven't seen it. I'm sorry.
It was a propaganda film. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Cool story, bro. Anyway, they just.
It's relevant.
I appreciated the information, Sam. Thank
they're
you.
Just trying
to. I go to art school. I know these things.
They're just trying to tie. I think. The very beginning of like film in this period into propaganda.
I like how Bolin calls them movers.
Yeah, Bolin does call them movers. Yeah,
movies.
And like the red-haired woman is essentially me. No, Marilyn Monroe.
That they're dying now.
Can she talk, please? She doesn't get to talk so far. It's a little annoying.
Yeah, she's Marilyn Monroe, so it's really odd that she doesn't talk at all, because that's literally what her character is supposed to be. Like, if you look at her mannerisms and her hair and her fashion, she's Marilyn Monroe with red hair.
I think they're doing it for her design. I don't know if, like, that's what she's trying to be, because that's not, like, the 20s, you know?
Did you guys not
but
have
it's
that
still
moment,
old-time sorry. Film period.
Did you guys not have that moment where you were like, hey, the reason that woman had red hair...
They said the dye.
I freaked out. I was like, there's proof.
Yeah, it was dye. They said it was Varric branded dye, yeah.
We're not there yet. We still need to talk about other things.
I know, we're not there.
We use the same hand.
We can skip around if it's related. Pokey training.
I thought that was there.
No, that was a different
scene. No, it was a little
I got it. I keep forgetting about the meaningless Milo stuff.
It's like, Pokey, you can't sleep on the bed, even though that was
But it was so cute!
But, like, it doesn't have a purpose.
Okay, and then we get this... And then we get this exchange, Milo being...
Can I argue that it does have, like, a purpose, but it's not, like, well-executed purpose?
That's what I think. Like, I can think of ideas for why...
It did have, like, a purpose, but...
Let me say the line, the... Being the alpha lemur is lonely, says Milo, and Tenzin's like, I know. And it's like, oh, that's what they're doing. Tenzin is tired and being... It's just so blatantly done, and it's done in two lines, yeah.
Well, that's just because that one line...
It's the same thing with the Dinara scene in, like, the previous episode, and that was, like...
Icky.
It was something interesting they could have done, instead it was kind of, like, watered down, and I just...
Well, it's like, hey, we want to get this point across, and then it's like, you didn't really get the point across.
Nice little lesson for the kiddies.
Anyway, Tenzin is tired of being the alpha male. Oh, how sad.
It's
I could get into more sexism stuff here, but let's not.
Well, I think it's not just that. He himself in, like, the leadership position, right, and is trying to be commanding.
Mm-hmm.
And then one, that's not. A lonely... Yeah, well, you know, he's trying, and he isolates himself, and there is an isolating... aspect of power, you know, like Korra, even among her friends, is still somewhat like isolated because she has a lot of duty like placed upon her, and we saw this more in like season one than we do now, you know what I mean? And not just anyways, I'm rambling, continue on.
I feel like it ties
more into him just being alone, like, because he's the last airbender, like, well, not really, that's a lie, but you know what I mean, like, he's
the last master airbender.
Like, I feel like it ties more into that.
I don't know if we see that, but whatever.
I don't know.
It's something about...
We don't really see anything.
They're trying to make it a character moment for Tenzin, and Tenzin doesn't really have a character, so that's a problem.
Yes.
Well, he did season one part of this season,
his character is kind of based off of his relationship with Korra, though, which is the problem, and now they're separated, so...
Like, I felt like that wasn't such, like, a big problem in season one, that his character, because his character...
I agree. It wasn't irrelevant in season one, but now they're focusing on him a lot, and...
He's a second plot. Like, he has to have a character now.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. Okay, moving on. I wrote in the outline as dumb cop stuff.
Mako, yeah, I thought that was really funny.
They called him Mako.
Mako, they did call him one of the guys. That was on purpose, definitely. But Mako was bullied. Who took pleasure in Mako being bullied?
I just thought those guys were mean.
Did you not see my Tumblr post? Oh, I was so happy about it.
I don't know. I felt like he finally got like knocked down a peg because he's not thinking clearly, and it just seemed to me like busting traps. But I didn't really think it was necessarily
This is another stereotypical thing Mike and Brian do. It's
he's
like,
a rookie cop.
Rookie cop, and the guys were like, "Oh, you can't go talk to the chief now."
Were just really mean.
They were mean.
I love how like the one guy like fixed his hair to look like Mako. Like that killed me. I thought that was really funny. Oh
yeah, and
yeah.
Mako,
oh my god, it's so funny.
And then Mako tells Raiko the stuff. Okay. Are you mad at Mako for betraying Korra like this, or do you think it was justified because it was his duty?
I actually liked him for it. I'm glad he did it.
Why?
Yeah.
Like, because Mako, like, before, like, we hated Mako, he's terrible, like, he's a terrible character, but now it's like Mako doesn't have a character anymore, and now he's slowly growing a character that you might like. Like, I like that he's respects his duty and that he's actually going to talk, and, I mean, he's honorable, and Korra, like, that kind of goes back to what I said last podcast about the team Avatar being like really willing to do underhanded and criminal things now. Like, I like that Mako took this stand and he's like, no.
He's developing a conscience.
Yeah, I like it.
And he's like going with his own gut, and this was like sort of a character wrenching moment because I may not be a huge Mako shipper, but canonly, Mako loves Korra, okay? And like going against what she wants like this is like a big thing. And I'm gonna sneeze. Hold on a second.
Well, now he's not being defined by Korra.
I like that. I like that.
You like that?
Bless you.
I was gonna sneeze, and I moved the phone away from my face.
We still heard it. Your sneeze is the most adorable thing. I'm gonna disagree with you three on this. I did not like Mako for this. You don't betray your girlfriend like that.
But she's a person with agency.
Yeah, so I mean, Barack Obama is so your face, Dylan.
I don't really
she's
care.
Starting a war. She wants to
still
send
don't care. You don't do that.
But it's no, like looking at this as like the war perspective, it's a really sicky situation because there's like a war happening.
Understandable.
And Mako, he took it out.
At the basic level, Mako is putting his work duty over Korra, which
isn't that what Korra's doing?
If he wants to do that, fine, but that's not cool.
Well, that's what Korra's doing too. So they're both
really
kind of just terrible.
I don't really
dating.
Care if Korra's doing that.
I don't really care about Makora at all.
Yes, this is the problem. We don't care about Makora, so we don't care if Mako's breaking us off. But yeah, that's not a cool thing. This doesn't make me like Mako more.
Well, if he had done it for a different reason, I would have disliked it.
They do. They try to portray it because he didn't like
Korra. He did it because if she sends troops, people could die.
Well, I don't think that's why he did it. They portrayed him doing it because he had a duty to the city and his job and the president.
Well, Korra could end up getting in trouble even if he hadn't said anything.
I'm not trying to be like saying that what he did was bad. I'm just saying that doesn't make him more sympathetic to me. I don't really
understandable.
I
just felt that it needed to be brought up that Korra would have gotten in trouble after the fact anyway. Does that make sense?
I
want to like someone that says that's so wrong.
Okay, Britt, how are you? I just don't care about this plotline already, and then I guess this is my very not weighty opinion on it.
So
now we see the General Iroh scene, which was so. They make it's like hi, like, we need to do this. We need to do this. Okay, well, no. Korra's like, president is blocking me on this, and he instantly comes up with, well, if we happen to be down there, then we can do this, and then.
So Maki. What am I talking about? Mako is more dutiful than Iroh. That makes a lot of sense, guys.
Yeah, Iroh instantly gives up on his post. Yeah, that's
true. Like, okay, Iroh.
He, like, barely had a bond with
Korra. Like, the judge from the last scene, all she had to do was, like, eat a polar bear.
I just don't care.
Raiko is there in less than 5 seconds after they say that, and then immediately after that he says, my hands are officially tied, and Korra's like, oh, and then we'll go to the Fire Lord. That entire scene is just one of the worst
I've
seen.
What is the Fire Lord going to do?
So
like, what does that have to do anything?
By the way, it's interesting they call her the Fire Lord and not the Fire Lady.
Yes,
I've been wondering
about that.
Yeah, just I don't know if we've ever seen them officially.
Lord of Fire.
Did they call Azula Fire Lord in the finale?
Yeah, I like they did.
Fire Lord. Okay, so Fire Lord. Okay, cool.
But it was kind of androgynous.
Yes, the only good part of we get to see Honora soon, hopefully. Maybe not after the end of this.
The reason I was mad about the ending of this episode is because they didn't make it to the Fire Nation. Like, that's actually why I was mad.
So, yeah, some people are very convinced at the end of this episode that Korra's, like, actually eaten. I don't know. We'll talk about that.
That's how Korra dies.
That would be a huge plot twist. The Avatar dies mid-season, and she's never seen again.
She's in an iceberg, guys. Duh, that's how this works.
Okay, next scene. Nuk-Tuk is never cold, and the hair dye. Bolin with, like, no clothes on, yeah.
Let's talk about Bolin for a second.
Okay, you can talk about Bolin with no clothes on.
Well, I have a huge crush on Bolin.
For those who didn't know.
He's, like, the first cartoon crush I've ever had. Let's see. He's shirtless. It's really nice.
Yeah.
He's cute.
Short shorts, man. Like, he's wearing booty shorts. Like, it's ridiculous.
I've always had a problem with how muscular Bolin is. Like, I don't know.
What do you mean?
He's stocky.
He fits like a muscle man of the 20s. Like, he's a muscle man of the 1920s.
I understand. As a male, though, I don't...
Does it make you feel uncomfortable, Dylan?
We don't look like that.
I actually think he's, like, from his medical perspective, he's actually pretty atomically okay. Like,
really?
For a stocky, like, largely built guy, you have to, like, put on, like, body fat per pound, and he's built, like, well-stocked in the chest and the stomach and the thighs with, like, actual power. Like, he probably could beat
a real
quite
person.
A few people in a hand-to-hand fight because he's just, like, well-built. Like, he has, like, the power internally, you know?
Okay.
It looks like Susan.
I don't know. I guess to me he looks like... Maybe it's right, but he looks as just very, very crazy. It's
okay. He's cute.
Okay, sure.
That's how I feel.
He's Bolin's very sympathetic.
He doesn't have like a six-pack abs and like abs like and then pecs like a Roman statue.
Yeah, that's true. Sure.
Like, I mean,
Maybe I'm used to the getting all psychological on this. Maybe I'm used to the media portrayal of muscular men.
Yeah, power fantasy of like comic book guys being all like muscular.
Yeah, maybe that's the schema in my head. So maybe it's different from that.
Like narrow waist, broad shoulders, as opposed to with Bolin, it's actually more realistic. Yeah, with that much muscle.
That's possible. I won't.
Bolin looks like a guy who wrestles bears on his free time.
And then Ginger's in the scene.
Yeah, and Ginger doesn't talk. I need Ginger to talk.
She does need to talk.
Can we actually?
Bolin, she's secretly me. When she talks, she's gonna have my voice.
And then Bolin's supposed to watch Naga.
Ginger with the most adorable voice ever. That'd be.
It is actually Ginger's voice actor, and she's just been keeping it a secret all this time.
That'd be good.
Do we want to talk about like the movie that they're making at all?
Well, what do they show of it?
In terms of like what you talked about earlier.
Just
in
the private. Propaganda stuff? What do you mean?
Oh my god.
In private. I don't remember what we talked about before. You can message it, yeah.
I just...
Oh, no. Okay, well, no. Okay, yes, let's do it. Okay, so I thought that people would be more outraged, not that one. I thought it'd be more outraged that,
Let's just say that they're dressed really skimpy.
Okay, so now let me preface this by saying all characters in the Avatar universe are their respective races of the fantasy world. So... people from the Southern Water Tribe are the race of Southern Water Tribe. They are not their skin color race because that's just not how it works.
Northern and Southern, so like Water Tribe.
Yeah, so it's like two different races, and then there's Water Tribe. We don't know if those originated from the same place or not. It gets really interesting with the cultural mixing. Like, what race is Bolin? Like, is he Earth Nation? I don't know. Maybe it's interesting.
I think we should refer to that more as like heritage because it'd be like a mix.
Yeah. Well, what are people? Well, we refer to. They're mixed, so sure. But we refer to people's races now as their heritage. So
yes, fair enough.
Even though the United States is mixed, yeah. But anyway, the point is
because we identify culturally in Avatar, that's a tad different.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the interesting thing is that the Southern Water Tribe is dark skinned and Bolin is light skinned, and they're portraying Bolin as a Southern Water Tribe person with his light skin.
And he's supposed to be a hero.
It's like maybe this is a commentary on their own movie. Maybe it's a commentary on Hollywood. It doesn't seem like it's being portrayed in a negative way is the only thing. It's like not very noticeable.
So yeah, I haven't really seen anybody.
If they're making a comment on it, then maybe it would be they'd point it out more.
And I feel like if someone would have noticed, it would have been Bolin. He would have said something.
I don't know. I don't think Bolin would notice. I think it'd be too oblivious.
He likes being a hero.
That's true.
I don't think Bolin really thinks like that. But I don't think people in their... We've seen no indication that people in their world notice skin color at all. So
yes, that's also true.
But anyway,
it was just more like, ew, Fire Nation.
Yeah, I guess give me your thoughts on that. Because I wonder if they'll be...
Email us.
Because we'll certainly see this plotline continue, the propaganda film. I'm interested to see if they like make a commentary on The Last Airbender or Hollywood in general on that. Or maybe I'm assuming that Mike and Brian are good here. Maybe they don't know that they're doing this and they're actually contributing to the problem. Who knows? I don't think anything is... For sure, because they don't, like I said, they don't comment on it. The next scene, Macora fighting, and then they break up.
You skipped lemurs.
Yeah, this is pretty bad. So we get two scenes in a row. The Macora scene isn't bad, but I trained all the lemurs, says Milo, and then they all fly
and
up.
There's an army of lemurs.
What is the
flying formation?
What is the point of this scene? I don't understand.
Do you want to give my interpretation, Dylan?
Yes, please.
It's showing what. How do I explain this? It's showing you are what how you raise your children will affect them, and he basically raised his child to be sort of like a general. You know, it shows the
for like 2 days
cultural significance and how you like create a culture that will go through.
I could see
really not executed well. Okay,
like,
that's
like created
executed
a monster.
Well.
I could see taking that out of this, but is that what you think? That's what they're actually trying to say.
No, they're totally just
what
being
I cute. Do, but I think it's really silly. Like, I don't think it was executed well, but I think that's what they were trying to say.
Okay, that's
maybe
that's,
they
that's
just thought,
fair.
Hey, you know, Milo's trying to train this one lemur, but now let's give him all these lemurs.
It's possible they're talking about parenting in this. I don't know if I took that from that.
Because all the lemurs are really cool.
Yes. Maybe they're going to defend. Maybe there's going to be a battle one time, and Milo's going to be like, the lemurs will protect us, and they'll just go.
I don't like that. I hope they don't do that.
Either way, the scene was completely irrelevant, even if it was.
Yeah, this isn't really all that important.
And, you know, if there we have scenes where they're just incredibly snappy dialogue, we can just cut this whole plot out. It was bad. Macora fighting and the breakup. First of all, this scene was animated. So I checked the credits. To my knowledge, this was just done by Perot, and there wasn't additional.
Well, the animation in the scene was kind of good, or different.
I did like.
I didn't
it
think
was different.
See,
but I
saw.
Like...
So to me, Mako looked like a stereotypical anime older male.
At the end, he did anyway. He had that face.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like, ooh.
So I don't know. I don't know if it was good. It was certainly not. We'll get into the animation, but it was certainly not flat. I guess.
Nah. Yeah, there's three. Okay. There's shadows.
Comments on the breakup in general, very stereotypical breakup. Were you surprised that Mako was the one that broke up with Korra?
I wasn't surprised the breakup happened at all.
Well, sure, it was pretty.
I thought they were building up to it. I was a bit surprised it was Mako though. I thought it would more likely be Katara, who's like, "No, you betrayed me."
Katara.
Oh my god, Korra.
Yeah, I kind of like how they did this. I guess I'm not happy that Korra wasn't asserting. Like, I'm not happy that it was the male was the one who's doing power in the relationship. But I thought it was realistic that Korra. Wouldn't immediately break up with him. Like, Mako's like a safety net for Korra right now, and she wouldn't want to like end that immediately. Like, she'd be trepidatious. I don't know if that's a word, but
yeah, it's a word.
Okay, so she'd be that about instantly breaking up with Mako. Like, she would Korra has a lot going on, and this isn't her biggest thing, I guess.
That's too much.
Yeah.
But I would have been like, I'm even fine, like, Mako broke up with her, like, I don't really care, but I'm upset because she cried, like she
went
from
she cried.
And I'm just like, if she hadn't cried, I would have been fine with it. That's the only part of it that bothered me.
Well, why don't
she
like it? Yeah, she said, why don't you want her to cry?
Well,
she
first of all,
to be
like,
sad.
I wanted righteous rage. I didn't want tears.
Okay.
I don't
like,
want her to
be
a
righteous
rage.
She's
cry.
So mad. She's throwing stuff, and then
I think,
it's like...
I think Korra's position here is totally justified, like...
Yeah.
Totally grounds to break up with Mako. It's fine. Like,
I guess, yeah.
She can cry. Like, I don't know. I didn't have too much.
Crying is not weakness.
I mean,
it's like cathartic.
I mean, I'm not saying it's weakness. It's just like, I don't know. Like, I feel like we've, like, all the time, it's just like Korra being so broken. And I understand that maybe it's because she's so stressed that her emotions are just insane right now. But, like, I don't know. It just really bothered me at the moment. And I was just like,
I just don't want her to be sad.
Yeah.
I think this is the first episode that I. this season speaking, that I was really, really sympathetic to Korra. Like, I cared what was happening to her, even if it wasn't done well.
Yeah,
and
it's just, like, the least sympathetic for me.
Like, I know, it's just different. I don't know why this was. But this is the possible first episode that I cared about what happened to her. And it's, I don't know if it's just because I've been watching it for a couple of weeks now and now I care. But, yeah.
I've actually been building up in how much, like, how little I care about Korra at this point.
Like I haven't cared about her at all season
I guess
so far.
I might be in the middle. I don't know. Is it possible to care, to, like, sympathize with Korra but not care?
I think that, I guess for me, Korra is too built into her current plot line, and I just don't care about that plot line, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't care about that plot
line. I don't care about the plot line.
I don't know about my feelings for Korra. I don't want people to... People, are again, in this episode are going to be like, Korra is being such a B-word, which I hate because of calling a female.
I mean, she does need, like, some maturing to do, but...
But, yeah, I understand being upset that people... I understand people being upset that she's acting mad all the time, but I don't like people constantly kind of pointing that out, and I think there's a lot of sexism.
Yeah, like...
For the record, the reason I'm that way is just because, like, it's not good characterization for her, and it's not because I'm like, oh, she's a B-word, like,
yeah,
for the
yeah,
record.
No, certainly, yeah.
She's a stubborn, you know, anger, temper,
like, she should be mad, temper, you know? But she's acting crazy.
Yeah, I don't like that there's this the single characterization of Korra. I actually kind of like
that's what's
this.
Driving
it. I kind of like if there's this aspect of Korra, but I guess it's not good that this is the only thing there.
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah, okay. Trying to find where. Okay, so then Lynn says, I guess I said the best line of the episode is Varric before. This is the second best line of the episode. What the flameo happened here? Why?
Flameo.
Like, just the word flameo.
Oh, well, she and Aang did get along famously.
That's true. So,
I don't.
Flameo. I don't even know how to describe it.
Everything word.
They had a free card to use this word once, and it completely, and it works amazingly.
It's like Smurf.
They introduced this word in season 3 of Avatar for no reason, and it's the dumbest thing, but it's amazing just because of how they did it and not commenting on it, and just, I don't even know how to describe it. It's just this and Hotman, specifically Hotman, are just great. And just Aang using them are great, and I don't even know.
The fact that it's Lin using it.
Yeah, well, Lin using it was interesting.
Makes me so happy.
Yeah, it's like, I don't even know. I've never even heard anyone. That was the point. We've never heard anyone but Aang use that language. So,
they get along famously.
Yeah, I guess that. I don't know if they were thinking that, but
the Lin feels are just overwhelming.
Yes, and then you should have seen Air Temple Island after Tenzin broke up with me, says Lin, which was good, I guess.
She's so epic.
That reminded me like so much of Toph right there. Like,
yes,
I love.
I want to know how many things she broke.
I kind of like how casually Lin takes the breakup. It's like,
like, the reason Air Temple Island is like off the ground. That's Lin.
<'Cause> of Lin.
Yeah.
Why there's so many dragon rocks around it, Lin.
Yeah, I could see that. And then we see Korra. Okay, so then the final scene in the episode. Korra's randomly in the ocean. We'll see comments on this from the voicemail later. Chased by Destin and Esko, who are randomly in the ocean.
I love how she's taking a speedboat to the Fire Nation. Like that drove me nuts. I was like, what?
You can waterbend there.
This whole situation doesn't make sense. Why is she alone, too?
I really thought this fight to the Fire Nation.
Because she's asking Rashly, which is what her, you know, default... Like,
yeah, if we saw her storm off after the breakup and then get on the boat and then go, that would be much improved, so we don't see her do that. Then
I really like this fight scene, though.
This giant spirit thing. I guess my thing with this fight scene was that they laid off the music, which they've done to good effect before, but this time it bored me. Like, there's no really music over it.
I didn't notice. There was
just drums.
I thought it was really it was probably the most exciting fight scene I've seen in the season thus far, and I like it.
I thought it was a waterbending fight, and it was exciting, because you don't usually have exciting waterbending fights.
Cool. Fight scenes are definitely subjective. I guess I didn't take this one as much.
Well, I was just impressed because it's waterbending.
Well, it's definitely better than the fight scene last episode. Down the hallway.
It's better than the fight scene in the cave episode 1 that wasn't much of a fight scene.
I guess this was the best fight scene so far. Okay, I'll give you that. That's not saying much, though, because none of the fight scenes have been impressive.
It was exciting.
Great, okay. And Destin and Eska, I don't even care. And then Korra spirit bends the thing. So this is something that they'll obviously explain later, but it's to the detriment of this episode. It's like, why, what's the spirit portal in episode two? It'll make sense later, but now it's just this random plot device. Korra is in avatar state and spirit bending.
Avatar state again, which is why Jeff is a genius.
Sure, but to our knowledge, Aang couldn't do this, so this may contradict Jeff's theory.
I'm glad that she didn't, like, actually...
It could be Avatar Wan that's, like... made the spiritual connection, and so Jeff.
I'm still confused about that. Like, what? That's the main part. I was like, did I miss an episode?
I've heard people say that Avatar Wan. Yeah, my initial thought was, did she learn this off screen from Unalaq?
I was like, I looked to my brother watching this, and I was like, when did this happen? Like, when did she learn this?
But the thing is that she's in the Avatar state, so it could not. It's probably not. It could be her doing that, but it also could be Avatar Wan. Either way, it doesn't. It raises questions, whereas it should have. It's to the detriment of this episode. And then,
like, how much time has passed? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, and then the spirit eats Korra. So, you know, that's it.
That's how Korra died.
Yeah, no, you go ahead.
It was just about where we were talking about the speedboat. Mm-hmm. So, you know where Dez and Eska, like, their little boat thing, whatever, gets jet skis get destroyed, and they're like, they come up and they're faster? Like, why didn't Korra just waterbend herself to the Fire Nation then if it's faster than taking a speedboat?
It's really far?
She just needed a boat.
But, like, speedboating to the Fire Nation doesn't make any sense. But then, like, Dez and Eska are going faster, and I'm like, this
maybe
is, like,
she would have gotten tired.
Oh my god. Like, this is probably, like, the worst scene ever.
Well, I mean, do you want to swim to another country? I'm pretty sure waterbending is,
but
like...
But speedboating, like, Republic City and the Fire Nation, like, why would you speed? Like, okay, they're not, probably not...
she doesn't want to get tired. That's why.
She could have taken, like, an actual boat, but she's like, speedboat, like, that's not gonna take...
Well, she needed to get there fast!
The logic of the scene.
There's a war happening.
There is no logic to
this. The logic of the scene doesn't make sense. Okay,
it's driving me nuts.
The thing I want to talk about is her getting eaten at the end. I've seen people say, "Okay, Korra's now dead. Okay, Korra's gonna have to go into the spirit world."
That she's dead, I don't actually.
No, I actually saw people on Tumblr say that.
Really? Yeah. Oh, Korra died.
I saw someone say this reminds me. I think this might have been Korra's spirit. So this reminds me of Harry at the end of Harry Potter. Korra's gonna die now and then come back to life. It's like,
that would be interesting.
Interpretation of this is, oh, Korra's just gonna bust out of the spirit after the cliffhanger. She's just gonna.
Maybe Pinocchio.
That's my brother said.
Like,
didn't even see this as a big deal. So what if she gets eaten?
I think it's Spirit World.
So, yeah.
It's really sad, but I didn't like. This is most of, like, Korra, but she got eaten. I was like, oh, okay.
My brother was like, burst out of the end.
It happens.
To my knowledge, they're not in the spirit world next episode. I don't know if we have a description though.
Maybe Korra's not even in the next episode.
See, it's called the sting.
Why is it called the sting?
Are there bees inside of that spirit?
Maybe it has to do with Mako and where he, like, figures out the plot. I don't know.
Okay, we don't have a description yet.
I want Mako as cop. Like, I want cop Mako, like, a lot. Like, I'm actually excited about this now.
He could be actual Batman.
Yes.
Like, okay.
Like, I have an entire theory about this. It's crazy.
Okay.
And then Bolin becomes Dick Grayson, just becomes Nightwing and wears really fabulous outfits, and Asami can be Wonder Woman.
Works for me.
Sure, yes. Anyway, so there's a wide variety of things that could happen at the end of this episode. But that's it. Let's give overall thoughts on the episode. Generally, again, what would you give it out of 10? 5 is an average episode of television. 10 is the best episode of television you've ever seen. 10, why? Why'd you like it? Why'd you not like it? Let's start with Delaney.
Okay, so score first.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess I'm kind of retconning from last time, because I think last time I gave it like a 7.5, and I'd give this episode a 7.5 also, even though I like this episode more. But it's just because, like, I don't feel comfortable giving it an 8 because of, like, the whole, did I miss an episode?
Yeah.
Like, I guess the more we talked about it, the more I was like, yeah, the pacing was kind of crazy, but I guess I was really into the plot this time, which I guess is why I liked it so much. But the Milo stuff, it was just like, why? I love Milo. He's adorable. He was super cute in this episode, but there was no purpose. Which is fine, I guess. but I don't know. It's not actually, but I don't know. And then I really liked Mako in this episode, and I hate Mako. Like, I hated him in the first, like, I just hated him, and then he was just kind of there this, he's just been there this season, but I really liked him in this episode, and he's actually central to what I think is going to happen. Like, of course he's a main character, but I mean, like, I have like this theory on how he figures out, like, who's the actual villain of the season. Mm-hmm. And then, so, which is strange that I like Mako. I finally like Balin, so that's good.
That is really good, I'm glad.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We need more Asami.
Yes, need more Asami.
I guess, can't really, oh, no, this is just one thing that bothered me about the crazy dialogue that I mentioned, like, when I gave my overview. You know, at the protest, and, like, they're yelling things at her? They're like, get a real dog.
Yeah, I heard that the second time, yeah.
Was it dog or job?
No, I'm pretty sure it was dog. Yeah.
And I was like, what? Like, what kind of insult is that?
I thought that was
that was funny. That was probably added in, like, ADR, and it was a joke.
That threw me off for 20 minutes. Like, yeah. I'm not joking. It threw me off for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, okay.
What? So,
Britt, out of 10, what did you think?
I gave it a 5.8. Okay. I gave the last episode I was on a 5.6, and I thought this was better by 0.2. I thought it was this improvement. Like, there are things that are worse, you know what I mean? But there are things that are also better. So okay. it's like certain aspects are going in different directions, and they need to reconcile. And, like, Delaney, this is the first episode where I didn't want to punch Mako in the face, and it made me so happy to be able to enjoy him on the scene and just enjoy his character. Because it's both, like, the cynical parts of him that are still sort of there, but he's, like, gaining this hopeful, he's gaining, like, more of a conscience. Like, I felt that he was bare bones, and maybe that was purposeful, like, he had lost a lot of himself, and now he's regrowing into a person. And Balin is sort of getting a plotline, which is nice. I cared about Korra for the first time, even though I don't really care about any of the plots that are going on. And there was Milo being adorable. So I gave it a 5.8. And Ferrick, who's great. Yeah. Okay. It doesn't get a 6 because there wasn't enough Asami.
Yeah. I think that's understandable.
That's like, and there wasn't enough Balin either. Or them
there was,
together.
There was plenty of Balin, but yeah.
But not good Bolin.
That's right. I'd probably get that.
You know what I mean?
Sam.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm just going to give it a flat 7.
Wow, that's very high compared to all your grades.
Higher than last week. Yeah. We're
higher than I don't care out of 10.
That's true.
I don't know. I thought it was better than last week. It's definitely, I think it might be one of my favorite episodes thus far. I like the Bolin stuff, obviously. I like the Sokka statue, which I didn't notice until now.
Yeah.
I thought, like, maybe it wasn't, like, the most solid episode. Maybe it was kind of, like, put together with duct tape in some ways. But, you know, I like the Lin. I like that the tumor that was the Makoa relationship got removed. There's, like, this trope on TV Trip. It's called romantic plot tumor. It doesn't really fit the definition of that, but it just felt like it was just there. And it was just getting in the way, like, oh, we have to remember the Makoa, it's still there, like, throughout the season thus far. And I'm glad that it's kind of not there anymore, or it won't be there, hopefully, in the future, as, like, to a greater effect. So, yeah, that's...
Okay. Look at me being the really negative one here. Okay, so I was going to give this a 4, originally. So now that the Sokka statue's there, this will get a 4.5.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so okay, this basically didn't work at all for me. None of it was, it was none of it was terrible. Like I said, that's the big plus. But it was just some of the worst writing. I don't understand how Tim is credited for this episode. It's a big disappointment. I just have to assume this is a writer's room. Not anyone's actually like working specifically on any episode, and they're just giving credits anywhere, but because this was just really, really not good in terms of writing, in terms of logical leaps that they're taking. I still don't care about the main plot. On the plus side, I did like Varric. I liked them focusing more on Bolin. I don't think it was done well. And, yeah, that's probably it. Didn't really like much else.
You know, whenever you score, it makes me feel bad that I gave it a higher score.
Well, like, you gave it a lower. You gave it a lower.
I've been giving
score
it a
7-point
thing. Like, I've been giving it like sevens the entire time.
It should be noted this is the first time I would say this episode of Korra is worse than an average episode of television. The only other episode I might say that about is The Great Divide for Avatar, but I think that might get like a 5-1. You know, like there's some good aspects of The Great Divide. But yeah, so I think this is, hopefully this will be the low point of their writing. And I'm hoping certainly for Beginnings that we'll be rebounding, but we do have one episode before that.
I'm glad that we're not in the Southern Water Tribe.
Yeah, yes. That was kind of a hole in terms of plot. Okay, we're going to get into the animation in a minute. Before we do, for you, listeners of the From the Spirit World podcast, Audible will be giving you a free, I don't even remember what I'm supposed to say, you can get a free audiobook download and a 14-day trial just by going to audibletrial.com/FTSW. Delaney has Virals by Kathy Reichs to recommend today.
If you're a fan of the TV show Bones, that she's the one who wrote the books that TV show is based off of, and she writes adult forensic mystery novels, and so she's started young adult forensic mystery novels, and they're epic, because the main character is the niece of Temperance Brennan. For those Temperance Brennan fans, you can be like, oh! I've only read the first two, there are three out right now. Kath Reichs co-authors these with her son, I think. It's science fiction also, like, the kids, their DNA gets mixed up, not with each other, but with an animal, and so, like, they're dealing with that, and then solving mysteries of the town, so it's kind of like Scooby-Doo mixed with, like, crazy science fiction DNA nonsense.
Cool.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, sounds nice. You can check that out at audibletrial.com/FTSW. One free audiobook download. Okay, so let's running short on time. I want to talk about the animation here. We're not going to do theories today. We'll check in on those next week. What I want to recommend is an article. AV Club does weekly reviews for TV shows. Emily Gundelsberger reviews Korra each week, and last week for Civil Wars Part 2, she basically didn't like review the episode. She took the time to analyze the animation that Studio Pierrot does, and it's a really interesting read. I think some of her main points are characters don't actually blink now. If you actually, I was looking closely for this episode. What I noticed this episode is that what Studio Pierrot does is sometimes characters will blink once a few seconds after the scene starts, and then they won't blink again the rest of the time. This trends towards a more overall problem of the character that is not talking does not move in the shot. Their background characters don't move, and even characters that are talking only make very deliberate moments only when they seemingly have to. I think what Studio Pierrot is doing is very much basing their animation right off the storyboards that they're given, whereas Studio Mir had fluidity and added stuff at their discretion, which they had agency in their animation, which is something that Mike and Brian encouraged from them. Maybe they didn't trust Pierrot as much. They didn't let them do extra stuff. Or maybe Pierrot just didn't have time or didn't, for whatever reason, animate this well. But the problem is that, rewatch this episode. If you want to, you can focus on characters that aren't talking and they just don't do anything unless they need to for whatever is happening in the plot. And it's very forced. It doesn't seem natural. I really think this is the worst animation we've ever seen from Avatar or Korra. And we had PR Movie animate some pretty bad episodes of Avatar. So what comes to mind is the Earth King. I wasn't a fan of the animation.
I thought that was nice animation.
I wasn't a fan of that animation episode, but
like when I think of bad animation, that's not the episode I think of in Avatar.
I think of Bitter Work.
Bitter Work, I think, was Jam Animation.
Think of episode 3, The King of Umashu. I think
I think that was DR Movie who did that one. So that was. I
think of the Southern Air Temple.
I don't know. That was too early on. But anyway, so any comments on this? Did you guys check out this article or any?
Yeah, but that's just the saddest sounding thing. The characters don't even blink anymore.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's so sad.
Well, when you said that, that explained to me why I was staring so awkwardly at Iroh the entire time. I was like, "What's wrong with him? What's he doing that's freaking me out?" And then now that you said that, that's what it was.
Yeah, especially in that scene, you can look. They just don't,
like, that freaked me out.
Basically, no one moves in that scene. Korra slightly moves when she's talking. It's like it's pretty ridiculous. I don't know. For me, it's I guess this doesn't severely hinder the experience, but it's like, and I don't think this is the reason why these episodes aren't living up to it, to expectations. I think it's probably because of the writing and production, but this certainly doesn't help.
No.
Any comments on this?
I kind of agree.
Yeah, I agree. It just sounds really sad.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway,
I agree with Dylan.
I'd check out this article. You can Google AV Club Korra, and you can click on the Civil Wars Part 2 review. I'd also recommend Emily's reviews each week. She does a good job on this.
They like review everything.
They review pretty much every show. Yeah. It's and I'm glad that they review Korra because it's important. Okay. Mm-hmm. We have one voicemail, one email to read.
Don't we have to read, like, Mel's stuff?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Give us Mel's thoughts on the episode. Mel, her computer crashed this week, unfortunately, and she couldn't make it, but she sent us her thoughts.
Do you want me to read
them? Yes, you read them, Sam.
All right, Mel says, that Milo plot made no sense and went nowhere and was the biggest filler I've ever seen. Animation was awful. President plot was okay. Thing with Eska is getting a little weird. I find it interesting that the president called Korra ordering the military action as insurrection, considering she's the Avatar. She used an expletive there. And this is kind of her job. That's what Mel thinks.
And Mel, I agree with everything Mel says.
Mel overall was very negative on the episode.
Yeah, she didn't like it. She said that it was, like, awful and, like, worst episode.
Yeah, so she's more towards me than you guys. Probably maybe more extreme. Well, although, I don't know. I naturally this gets a 4 without the addition of the Sokka stuff.
Oh, I should have asked her what rated the
episode. I think she'd probably be around me on it.
But she's not answering my text right now, so.
I wonder if she knows about the Sokka statue.
Yeah,
I texted her about that. Oh, good. She hasn't said anything yet.
Okay. Anyway, let's listen to Felicity's email. She sent this in after the episode, so it is commenting on the episode.
I really had to say something about this episode. I was really disappointed of it. And I've never said that about any Avatar episode, probably besides The Great Divide. Like, Bolin's characterization is just, I don't even know what's going on. The thing with the president was very unrealistic. I mean, the only redeeming qualities were, like, Korra and Mako broke up, and the little side story with Lin almost blowing up Air Temple Island. With Tenzin breaking up with her, and Pokey, that was cute, but it just didn't do it for me, and I'm just so disappointed in it. And besides the ending was, how did Desna and Eska even get in the middle of the ocean like that? I mean, I guess it was cool that Korra did this cool thing in the Avatar state, and with controlling the spirits, and I'm probably going to assume that that was Wan going through her, helping her do that, because as far as I know, or we know, none of the Avatars knew how to control spirits, so I guess I'm excited for that, and I hope they redeem themselves, because I'm pretty sure that Korra's going to be in the spirit world next episode. So thanks for listening, and thank you for letting me listen to you.
I like how she sends us voicemails each week.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Felicity, for sending that in. I think
I sent one in last week.
Okay, Sam, yours don't count.
Oh, I think they count, Sam.
Sam's voicemails are just telling me what she's doing at the moment. And
it makes me feel any better, Sam. He doesn't respond to my asks on Tumblr, so.
Dylan didn't respond to my mailbag questions for like a year.
That was like 5 years ago, yes. Okay, anyway, the main thing I agree with Felicity is the how did Destin and Esk even get there? Like, how are they going to find Korra in a random point in the ocean? It's just so ridiculous.
They found her.
Anyway, I do think her general attitude about the episode is maybe... I've been seeing some people agree with you guys, but a lot of people also have been negative, so I'm not sure what the general reaction
People have been, definitely saying stuff about Bolin's characterization.
I don't know if Bold's characterization was weird. I don't know if they executed that plot.
I think it's because we finally got character. We don't even know what he's like, to be honest.
What if we thought he was completely different than what Mike and Brian think he's like, and we're going to end up hating him, and he's going to be awful?
Want to hate him?
Yeah. This is like the closest thing to Ladies Man we've seen.
Yeah.
With his fangirls. Like, that's about it.
Yeah.
But he has fanboys too. Yeah, that's true.
But everyone was cheering for Bolin. He just has fans.
Yeah. So it's like, we don't know.
I like that one guy. Oh, look, it's Bolin.
Yeah, that was the way he said it was awesome.
But anyway, thank you. Thank you, Felicity, for sending him. We got an email from Sydney.
I like your name. I like that name.
Yes. She said, what do you think about Unalaq's ability to sort of bend the spirits to go back to the spirit world? Do you think that his ability to control the spirits make the job of the Avatar seem useless? Why would they need a mediator between two worlds if people could just bend the spirits into submission? Also, do you think this ability has anything to do with water bending? P.S. I love the podcast. I especially enjoy the depth of analysis you do for each episode because oftentimes it brings my attention, which I couldn't have noticed otherwise. Anyway, keep up on creating music podcasts. Thank you, Sydney. That's a really good point, actually. If random people can just control the spirits, why do we need a bridge to the spirit world?
Maybe Unalaq's the spirit.
I even have a counter to that, it's just a thought that I had.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, for the most part, there's an entire separate place for the spirit, so they don't seem to, like, this is, like, the first time they're actually, like, coming into, like, the normal place. Like the koi fish. They're not going to do anything. They were koi fish. And then only Heibai, he was just mad for, like, 10 minutes. And then, but, like, in general, like, the spirits aren't really a problem. So this is the first time we're seeing them, like, go crazy and, like, a lot of them swarming Heibai the earth. Yeah,
was a thing. I forgot about
him. Yep, Heibai. And the Monchi Tom's clearly going crazy in the library. So, you know, like, I just don't think it's, like, so much of a problem that, like, I still think, like, the Avatar's still necessary because there's still a whole nother place, as far as we know, that the spirits are.
Yeah. So,
that's just my thought process.
I don't know. It's really interesting.
We don't know anything.
Do I think his ability has to do with water bending? Probably.
They seem to like sub-bending a lot.
Yeah.
Chi-bending.
Water bending also. So it could be chi-bending, yeah. Waterbending seems to get all the cool sub-bending abilities.
The chemical bonds that have energy in the spirit world.
They wouldn't.
No,
that, no.
Probably not.
No science in Avatar.
Too sciencey, yeah. Anyway, I think...
Lots of science!
I know.
But I love the science, too.
It's very sciencey. I think that spirit bending is possible, too. I don't know, though. We will see, probably very soon. But yeah, thanks. You can email us, guys, and send voicemails. Thanks for feedback. Oh, I should say, last episode for Civil Wars Part 2, you guys, you can vote on DF and give your personal rating. You guys were unexpectedly much more positive about this. Over 60% of you gave it a 7, 8, oh, like 80% of you gave it a 7, 8, 9, or 10. Most common vote was a 7, but like 4 out of 34 gave it a 10. 7 out of 34 gave it a 9. I think those are unrealistic grades. Like, I'm not saying, like, obviously...
Just because it's Korra...
Obviously, you're entitled to your opinion, but, like, I think people naturally want to give it a really high grade.
Yeah.
Just because it's Korra, yeah. When I think we should just look at it more critically, I guess. But anyway, you can vote on the poll for... The next episode's up now. I don't know if anyone's voted or not, but... you can vote on domgufang.net. This isn't on our podcast page. Oh, people have... Oh, no, that's the other one. I didn't take that one off. That's annoying. Okay. Someone gave it an 8 and someone gave it a 9 so far for Peacekeepers. So, yeah, great.
That's nice.
Yeah, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, why they gave it Peacekeepers? It doesn't even have anything to do with it.
Yeah, why is this episode called Peacekeepers? Oh, nope. Yeah, I don't know.
No? Is it because everyone else is a Peacekeeper except Korra? I don't know.
Yeah, actually the title had nothing to do with the episode. I gotta think about this. Tell us why this was called Peacekeepers, because I don't know right now.
I don't feel like thinking about it. And
yeah,
it's just
anyway.
Like,
thanks for listening, guys. I've been your main host, Dylan. I created the podcast with AJ. I host, produce, and edit it. Technical directors are AJ, Kevin, and Jeff. Co-hosts. Co-hosts are Delaney.
Yeah, we're here
Mel,
too, Dylan.
And, no, not Mel was on. Delaney, Sam, and Britt.
Mel was not,
but she gave her thoughts. Musical credits by the Ishida brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman and Luke Tripp. Logo and banner by Kevin Coppa. Dongfeng is owned by Jake. So yeah, thanks for listening. Send us your thoughts. We'll be back next week talking about The Sting.
Why is it called The Sting?
I don't know. We'll see.
Another title that's not going
to
make
And importantly, if you enjoyed today's podcast, consider donating to From the Spirit World. All donations go directly to supporting our podcast. You can donate by going to dongufeng.net/podcast and clicking donate at the top.
Would you tell if somebody did that?
Yeah, I would tell you. I don't know. I guess I would say it on. I would thank them on air. So yeah, no one has donated yet. Someone did sign up for an Audible subscription recently.
Oh, thank you, person.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Yay!
Podcast bios. You can check those out on our page too. Notably changed.
Please don't read mine. It's terrible.
No, it's not. Notably changed recently. Me and Sam's, at least, to affect not at Baleska being shipped. Email, Tumblr, Twitter at Dongwufeng for all of them. Dylan at Dongwufeng. And yeah, so thanks for listening. What do you guys think we should end on?
Flameo.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
Yes,
Flameo.
The entire time we were talking, Dylan, I was like, we have to end the Flameo. That's all I was thinking about.
I don't keep track of what we've ended on in the podcast history, but
we've ended on Flameo
several times.
But do you want us to like think of something else?
No, Flameo is fine. I mean, what else is there? Anyway.
Big to do.
Yeah. I don't think that was
it. I love Lynn.
Yay. Hooray, Lynn. Yes. Okay, thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3. Flameo.
Flameo.
Flameo. Flameo.